Good evening, everybody. This evening, we're going to speak about a little bit of a sensitive topic related to marriage. Out of the people on this table, I've been married by far the least, so hopefully you'll educate me a little bit. That being said...
institution, so is Bellevue.
Okay, so the mathematician over here always is with that. So we'll speak a little bit about the Parsha, and then we'll go into the Halacha. So we know Vatama Sar Bekiris Arba, he Chavron Beretz Kanan, Vyava Avram, the Spod of the Soda, Vlivkosa. That's at the beginning of the Parsha. Sarah passes away, Parsha Chayesar. And Avram famously comes to bury her in Chavron. And what does he do? He cries over her. So the Torah said, Vayavo Avraham, the Spod of the Soda, Vlivkosa. So number one, the Vayavo Avraham is interesting. I mean, he came from somewhere to somewhere. And in the Torah, the Chaf is small. Vilevkosa, so the Chaf in the word Vilevkosa is smaller than the rest of the letters in that word. So there's a lot of discussion in the Mepharshim. However, Rav Hirsch, we're going to quote two pieces of Rav Hirsch this evening. Rav Hirsch argues that the word bow connotes coming from the outside to the inside. And that means that Avram was in a public place and he came inside to cry. And it brings a lot of proofs that the word bo or ba connotes coming inside to be more private. And therefore, Abraham was outside in the public. You can imagine the crowd at the funeral, etc. And when he wanted to really cry for her and kind of move along emotionally, that couldn't take place outside. Hu eino mara es tsaro barabim. Abraham would not show his emotions to the public. So says the first, perhaps that's one of the things that's alluded to in that small chaf. When it says Vlivkosa, the small chaf, perhaps that means that he cried somewhat privately. It wasn't a public spectacle. And it says, Yodim Anumash Haisa Sora La'Avram. We all can understand, we know what Sora must have meant to Avram. And how profound his sorrow must have been. So certainly in public, he eulogized her, and certainly in public he cried for her. Ah, however, who knows es yiguno belibo, so chechi beso. The primary mourning took place in private. And you can imagine, anyone who's been through personal suffering, you might have seen them cry, you might have seen the pain express itself, outwardly to some degree, but that's only a very small fraction to what that person is experiencing internally. Internally, the person's really a mess, right? And the proof is, that outwardly they can hold it together for only a little bit of time until they lose it, meaning that reflects the fact that they're fighting internally. So Rav Hirsch argues that Avraham certainly had this profound emotional connection with Sarah, and her loss meant the world to him. And the primary suffering was inside his heart. And Rav Hirsch argues that Avram did a lot of crying in private. Now, in this generation, we can relate to that concept, that a spouse is someone who you grew together with emotionally, and therefore Avram missed his wife. Ironically, in the classical Mepharshim, you don't see the same degree of perush that kind of resonates with our generation. But Rav Hirsch had a way of connecting the Torah to our generation. And similarly, at the very, very end of the parsha, Vayivah Yitzchak ha'ohel Sarah imo. So Rivka meets Yitzchak for the first time. Yitzchak brings her into his mother Sarah's tent. Vayikach es Rivka v'tehi lo liisha v'ye'ahaveha. And the Torah again testifies an emotion. Yitzchak loved Rivka. Einachem Yitzchak acharei imo. And he was consoled after his mother's passing. So this is where Rav Hirsch again has a beautiful essay. What's a little bit ironic about the progression of Yitzchak's actions? Number one, he takes her into the tent. Number two, she becomes his wife. And number three, he loves her. So says Rav Hirsch, in the secular world, which one of those things would have happened first? Before you marry someone. Oh, right, exactly. Right. So Robert's going to point out that Rav Hirsch is going to fall into trouble here. So let me tell you the Rav Hirsch, and you're going to ask a very, very sharp question on him. So Rav Hirsch says that most of the marriages that are in the non-Jewish community, it's founded on ahava. And there's a little spark of romance, etc. And that leads to marriage, but he says we understand that that's not really
Right, exactly.
That he says it's clearly not what we would define as genuine ahava. He says, "Aleinu rak lahatzitz ma'at b'teurim misupre ahava shalem." So if you look at their love poetry, or the, you know, the love song, so to speak, you know, the movies that are, let's say, kosher, you know, the chick flicks, etc. So alokhim me'achaim umiyad anurim es ha'tehom ha'amuka ha'mafrida ba'olam ha'lo yehudi bein ha'ava shel ben hazug l'fi hanisun levein ma'ashem misrachesh achagach. I mean, there's a tremendous contrast. And he says, oh, but in contrast to the non-Jewish world, what do we have? What? First you take the wife, and then you build upon the relationship, and then there's ahava. Kana chatuna eina hapisga. The wedding is not the apex. Elarak hatchala shel ahava amitit. It's only the beginning. So as opposed to the secular world, where like you hit this pinnacle at the wedding, at the love, and then I guess afterwards, in the marriage, there's this drop, there's this fall. In contrast, in Judaism, we believe that there is a spark there, but the goal is to keep on building, and that is what Ahava really is. You start small, and you build towards Ahava. And again, what he's basically saying is that the Jewish view of marriage is not based on romance, it's not based on a physical relationship, but again, there is a tremendous emotional depth, like bonding of souls, that Rav Hirsch is speaking about. And certainly, Parshas Chayisara is the Parsha of Shidduchim, and therefore, Shlomo, he had to be old enough to ride this ride over here tonight. We're going to speak about the mitzvah that every rabbi would tell you. If you give a Monday night shiur, never speak about this topic. before we do that, I got you hooked. Robert points out that you're saying about when the Torah speaks about the relationship between Yaakov and Rachel, Ahava is emphasized earliest on. When they initially
what
meet.
Does it say Ahava?
But it does not use the word Ahava. It just, you know, there was clearly a romantic episode.
You shock Yaakov and Rachel. Like,
right.
So it's called Avayev.
But there's no Ahava there.
Going through the whole story, I think it's clear that they didn't even say that.
It says that Yaakov is Rachel.
That's Rachel.
Afterwards.
Okay.
Afterwards.
Hmm.
And that,
I hear that. So Robert says that if you look closely there, it does seem to suggest like Romans. But at the same time, we certainly understand that Yaakov and Rachel's relationship was beyond profound, and that's also probably, you know, why he cried. Also, it wasn't like the typical, you know, you meet in Starbucks and you know, you ask her out and go ice skating and etc. You know, clearly there was a depth there. You know, you don't cry on someone's shoulder unless you recognize this, you know, something very significant. But now that we've, we'll say, explained on the partial level that relationships in a marriage are very profound and deep and an emotional bond for a lifelong partner, so I want to speak to you about the mitzvah known as Ona. Now, if I say the word Ona, you're going to raise your eyebrow and say that is usually a reference to the physical relationship and an obligation on a man to his wife. In a private setting. And that is accurate. And that is so not what we're going to talk about. This is not a chassan class refresher. This is not anything like that. And don't worry, in case you're about to leave. Like, Mr. Liebowitz is like, listen, man, understand. False advertisement. I'm out of here. You know, I'm never coming back to this shul again. Crazy rabbi. So, man, that would be an appropriate response if I, you know, kind of just laid that out. But I think there's an element of the mitzvah that I've been zochet to learn that is not talked about, I think, enough. And it's not at least analyzed on a halachic level. It's like, you know, there's like shiurim in, you know, nida. There's like, and there's also like these marriage, like, people. And I don't think we analyze the halachic literature enough, maybe, on the emotional pieces. So let's try to see what I'm talking about. Number one. Talk a little bit halachic before we go more emotional. So it is true. Onasa keitzad. So the Shulchan Aruch and Evan Ezer Hilchos Ksuvos Siman Ayin Vav Sefala says that what is the deal with this concept known as ona? Kol ish chayv beona kvi kocha ukvi malachto. So no questions asked. There's an element here of the physical relationship and based on a man's profession and physical capabilities. So we'll say a man needs to be physically available. Okay, it's understood. Pasuk and halachir aleph, asur la'adam limnoa me'ishto onos, and a man is forbidden to withhold this availability from his wife. V'im mona'a k'dei letzara, and if a man intentionally is, you know, not available, over below sase, he violates an isur lav, do'onos lo yigaroyim. Right, so pasuk and tefer, lo yigar, thank you, Abe, for the correction. So in Parshat Mishpatim, the Torah lays this mitzvah out, and there's a little bit of lamdas here. Is it a mitzvah aseh or mitzvah los aseh? So from the Torah's phraseology, it seems to be a los aseh, unasa lo yigra, and that means you shall not detract from the time allotted to her. Then there, the context is if a man were to add an additional wife, he cannot detract from the initial spouse's rights. However, other Rishonim count it not only as a los aseh, but as an aseh as well. Just to kind of focus on the very bottom line halacha, there is an asay. We just said, onas ketsa, right? The first halacha was called ish chai v'ona, right? So again, there's certainly shown him, it's Rav Saji, if I'm mistaken, it counts it as one of the 613, that there's a positive commandment. So again, there's a little lamdas. Is it a lav? Is it an essay? But all in all, without elaborating on the details of that element of the mitzvah, there is a obligation to be available, and there's a los asay to prevent the wife from having her time. I mean, we mean in a very physical sense of the word. Okay. And furthermore, the Ramah writes, of Amisha Eino Mekayim Ona, this is in Eben Ezer Simin Kufnan Dalit, Yecholin Lindoso, this man can be excommunicated from the community, Ulachrimo Sheikayim Ona O Yishayigarish. So the Markowitz and I have never done this before. It was not really done in our community, obviously, but hypothetically, if a woman were to complain that her husband is not doing his husband's job, so Beis Din can, force the man to divorce his wife, or anything along those lines. Okay, very, 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 very nice. There's a concept of ona on the books. All right. Now, here's what we got to talk. Very nice. Says the Sefer Haredim. Here it is. Ready for this? What if the mitzvah was only in the physical realm? So then we have to ask ourselves, okay, so what's the purpose of it? What's the purpose? What would you say? Push-up shot. You have to be available for your wife for what purpose? So the Haredim says, Sefer Mitzvah Asay, L'chaim Adam Onaso V'af Kishi Ishta Me'uberes. So I would have maybe thought that the whole idea is it's linked to the mitzvah of Peruvu. And therefore, what's the Nafkamina? If a woman is currently pregnant and she is biologically incapable of becoming pregnant, because she's already pregnant, and therefore there's no mitzvah puruvu, the mitzvah of ona would not apply anymore. However, says the Sefer Haredim, absolutely not. Even when the woman is pregnant, who mitzvah b'mitzvah zush emar, what's the proof text? The simach es ishto. Wow. And by the way, v'ikanami b'ha mitzvah lo saseh, v'ikshiva onasa lo yigareya, the minyan taryag l'smak. So again, the mitzvah lo saseh is really on the books, and the mitzvah of Pru-Ravu is really on the books. But the Sefer Haredim's Chiddush is that there's a mitzvah's essay tucked in there that besides for Pru-Ravu and besides for the Lo-Sase, a man needs to proactively be available. And Ramosha also in a tshuva, Ramosha Feinstein responds to a tshuva regarding some of the details of this mitzvah, of this din, and he says it's very clear that the mitzvah of Ona is not related to the mitzvah of Pru-Ravu, and therefore even if one's spouse is already pregnant, he is absolutely obligated to be available in the same way he has to provide food and clothing. No question about that. Fine. All right. So if we were to stop here, it would still seem like the reason why not to give the shir. Right? Meaning, okay, all in all, you want to say that the mitzvah is not based on Peruvu. Okay, this is a nice lumnus there. That if the woman is above age and, you know, Peruvu is no longer in the picture, and if she's pregnant or whatever it might be, if Ruvu is not a factor anymore, you might have thought that Ona is no longer applicable. Kamash Malan, black on white, Sefer Chayim, Ramosha Feinstein. No, Ona and Peruvu are two separate things. However, we would have thought, though, the mitzvah is all still about something, what? Physical, exactly, Shalom, exactly. Something physical and something not to be discussed on a Monday night shiur. It's a private topic. And that's why we got to talk. That's what we got to talk about. I'm listening to a shiur on Sukkos. Aramayevsky and I talk, and he says, you don't have the podcast guide headlines yet? I said, no. I listened to Why You Torah in the car. says, why is always great? But he said, often you speak about topics that are discussed on headlines. You like it. So I'm like, I don't even have an app to play podcasts. Podcasts and me, we're not really. You go, who listens to podcasts? You listen to podcasts? Listen to my medical podcast? Listen. What does Adam Carolla listen to in the car?
Not in the car.
You want to share? You want to share what you listen to or no?
No, on the bus I can't. On the car I can't because I can't drive.
Oh, you get two because you're actually very smart. You like actually listen to people who talk to you, as opposed to me. That's like, you know, I hear it. What's your podcast? What's your go-to podcast, Adam?
Why you talk?
That's not a podcast, really, right? Yeah, it's also known as a podcast. I mean, it's an app. It's an own app.
Anything that comes
you download and you put into
it. Yeah. But yeah, it's not. I mean, a podcast. You know, it's like a series. Yeah, why is it? You're the Why You Talk guy. So headlines his own thing, and he came to speak here when I first moved here, David Lichtenstein, he came to speak here. So you were there, it was Sunday morning. It was the same morning as the TABC open house. I was so annoyed. It was very pre-COVID. The bagels, it was great. One of those great pre-COVID things. Yeah, it was just like bagels and a good schmooze. No masks. Yeah, those are good times. Anyway, so I'm listening to a shir on Sukkot, because I listen to Armevsky, and I installed an app to listen to podcasts. And I follow now the Headlines podcast. I also follow Jeff Combs' podcast, Saturday at a Shabbos. I listened to a few episodes. That was also good. Also, you got to love Jeff Combs, you know. And it's amazing. So, I'm listening to Sukkot, to shir related to the mitzvah of sleeping in the sukkah or whatever. And in that sugya, there's a major question about leaving your spouse to sleep in the sukkah. And there's a contradiction here, because on one hand, you have to live in the sukkah. At the same time, we know that it's less than natural to, sleep in a room that's not next to your spouse, and that is a major heter for married men to not sleep in the sukkah. And that's, why I've been instructed, maybe not the norm in Klal Yisrael, but my rebbeim have told me not to sleep in the sukkah because of things like this. Whoa. So in the middle of that shit, it was Rav Haver. I don't know enough about him. British? Maybe a rebbe in the near? He's the British one. There's a lot of Rebbe Habers out there. He's the one. He's been in the mirror forever. I don't know. Unfortunately, I don't know enough about him. But in the context of that shir, I was so impressed with his mastery of Torah. He starts rattling off Koros about Ona. And I had it in the back of my mind. And he pointed out that the mitzvah of Ona is a lot more than the physical relationship. And Baruch, he had no idea when he was giving this talk on the Headlines podcast that he was feeding me a shir completely unrelated to the mitzvah of sukkah. And I kept it on my head. And today I went back to the podcast to put the makoros down. Because when he quoted a makor, he didn't just quote the makor, he quoted it by simon. He's like, well, obviously there's a maram lubin simon and gimel. And I'm like, who knows? Shuvah is a maram lubin by heart. But he does, Baruch Hashem for him. And the Maharam Lublin was asked a question about a woman who was going to be married on Friday night. Can she go to the mikveh b'leil k'nisa Shabbos? Ho'il v'minog she'ein ha'chasen bo'el b'yilas mitzvah b'Shabbos. Now, we don't passing like that anymore. But assuming that one should not have the first time relations on Friday night, v'imkein ein osa tevila tevilas mitzvah. So perhaps we should not permit a woman to go to the mikveh in light of the fact that it's not really for a mitzvah. You can go to the mikvah on a Friday night for a mitzvah, but to go to the mikvah on a Friday night for no mitzvah, so that's not allowed. So here's the kasha. They're not going to be together. Why not? Why not? Because it's Shabbos. So they're not going to be together. So can she go to the mikvah? So says Maram Ben, yes or no? Nir la hatir la litvol b'lil Shabbos. Totally fine. Why? Af agav de'in bo'al b'ilas mitzvah. Even though they're not going to be together until after Shabbos, Mishum, De'en HaBe'ilah Bilvad Hi Mitzvah. Who's to say that the all mitzvah is that level of relationship? Ella, here it is. Kol Mine Krivus She'ada Mesamech Behem Es Ishto Havi Mitzvah. That is a line to never, ever take off the forefront of your head. Any type of closeness that a man makes his wife happier, have a mitzvah. So, kol minei krivus havin la simcha. When a wife feels closer to her husband, you're making her happy. Whether you touch your finger, or you make her smile, or it's a lot more private than that. Is it Mefush or Gemara? He says, Hayotze Lederech, someone who's going on a traveling, Tzarech Lifkot Hashish, before a man goes on a business trip, there's a chiyah for the man to do something with his wife before he goes. Now, obviously, if you learn that Gemara on a Pashat level, it means to be intimate. However, the Gemara says, Afilu Samach Levesta, even if it's very close to the time of the month where he's not allowed to be with her. So, you know, Rabbeinu Tam's pshat on that Gemara is that it's not talking about that. Says Rabbeinu Tam and that Gemara, the Pekidazu Eina Tashmish. The Gemara doesn't mean to say that a man has an obligation to be intimate with his wife the night before he goes on a trip. Ella Keshu Rota, let's say, but that Imhu Rachu Gemena. A man cannot go far away from himself. Okay, it could mean that. Oh, here's the key line. Bishar Dvarim. V'yadaber al libo. Part of the mitzvah of Ona is just being with your wife and speaking al libo. That's what it means. And therefore, in the beginning of the shiur, I said we're going to speak about Ona. And usually, if I were to ask a normal person, when I say Ona, what do you think it means? And people would say, well, it means something very physical. And the answer is yes. We learn the Shulchan Aruch. There's no question that that's what it means. But if you stop the sugya there, you have completely misunderstood and underestimated the depth of this din. And again, it has always been intuitive to us that Sarah, you know, her death leads to Avram crying. Because, what do you mean, they're married. Of course he's going to cry after losing his spouse. And it's always been intuitive that the Torah says that Yitzchak, quote-unquote, loved Rivka. Yeah, that's intuitive. And we always also know, on a halachic level, that there's a concept called Ona. But I'm pointing out this evening that they're not different sugyas. When we think that the logical definition of marriage needs something more emotionally involved, it's not an independent reality. It's not like there's the Torah world with its dry halacha that says, well, it depends on your job. You have to be available once a week, twice a week, or, you know, whatever. Now, again, there is literature about it, no question. But in the halacha of Ona is the man's obligation to be available. And the Rambam writes very clearly in Hilchos Yishus Perek Tesvav, V'chein tzivu chachamim sheyeh adam mechabed es ishto. Man is obligated to absolutely honor his wife, Yoser Migufo, even more than his body, the Ava Kigufo. Wow. So a man has to view his wife as a queen. So if someone has a lot of money, he should spend it on her, and etc. So let me just quote a source. There's one source that didn't make it onto the sheet yet, but it's very clear. There's a Gemara in Mesechus Pesachim that has been echoed. In a person needs to make his wife happy. And Rashi says, Afilu shelo b'shas onasa, meaning even if it's not the formal ona time, it's quote unquote time. Meaning there's a concept of when a man notices that his wife is looking for time, you need to respond to that. And that is not a small deal. And the idea is that included in the mitzvah is to be available emotionally for your wife. And this is the Masorah that I received from my Rebbe when I was first getting married. So I remember it was very new for me. Now imagine being a yeshiva boy who learns night seder every night of the year. And all of a sudden you're told not to go to the base. Imagine Shana Rishona. So, again, some of these things might seem so intuitive. It's so important to point out that it's not always so clear to people what's right. And my Rabbi Rameir Tversky, this is Rameir Tversky, Soloveitchik's grandson, Chrissy's son, a man who needs no introduction. So, yeah, when he was telling me about these dinim, teaching me the ropes, so I remember one funny thing was that I said, so when Yantav comes around, how does one be Masameach his wife? So what did he say? He said, I just give my wife permission to swipe the credit card as she pleases. And that was a very important piece of Masorah. that you're encouraged to swiping at the credit card, you buy a new dress, buy a new jewelry, whatever it is, you know, swipe as you please. That was one very important lesson. And the other one is that he said, Yoni, you know, if you want to go to the basement just one night or whatever, and your wife clearly is in need of emotional attention, there's no question that that's included in the mitzvah of Ona. Wow. And you know what my Rebbe said? That, you know, Hachbar also is Mamsan of Yushin. He said in the name of Rav Willigan, it's also others, he said the word Ona literally means time. That's what it means. It doesn't mean something private. It means a man needs to be available for his wife, whether that means whatever it means. You know, every husband knows what it means in their own home. I just point out that something that meant a lot to me. My wife and I, actually, when we first married, we had one child already. We went to visit one another by Rebbe. So now we're covering all three Rabbanim under my chuppah. So Rabbi Shlomo Hochberg was my Masada Kedushin, the Rabbi of my shul. He's like my posek. I call him all the time. He's like my halachic Rav, and that man and I, you know, we're close. Baruch Hashem. So he's the one again who told me Ona means time. That, you know, he told that word of Rav Willig. Rav Tursky told me, you know, built into the mitzvah is the emotional availability. And then my wife and I, we wanted to visit Rabbi Kamenetsky and my other Rebbe, the other eight Kedushin. So Rav Tursky and Rabbi Kamenetsky were my eight Kedushin, my Hachmik Masada Kedushin. So the book on the Baba Bacha Rebbe had just come out. Dr. Tlushkin, so he wrote the Sefer Rebbe, right? Have you been through that book? Anyone? Yeah. You've seen it. Yeah. You dabble in it. So I've dabbled in it also. It was my summer reading. I got up to like page, like, you know, like one. You know?
I was like,
really? There's another one also? But the Tlushkin one made it like big. When it came out, I wanted to get it out of the YU library. And it was like, I'm like, there's a wait list. You couldn't get it. And I bought it. So, you know, I bought it like on Twitter, you know, whatever, a while later. But it's in my house now. I own it. Again, it's amazing. Something that I had not seen in the book because I only got up to like the first, you know, maybe 30 pages. So my Rebbe said to me and my wife, he said, do you know what it says in here? The Lubavitch Rebbe was very, very busy. But every day, Yehari Galyavor, he had a cup of tea with his wife. A half hour. Cup of tea. And they, by the way, apparently had no children, right? No children. And for a half hour every day, no matter what his schedule was, half hour, cup of tea with his wife. So, you know, we look at these Makoros, and again, sometimes it's obvious, and as Masil Hashem obviously teaches us, you know, what's obvious doesn't mean you shouldn't talk about it, right? Meaning, but if one spouse is in need of time from the other, so it's your job to be there. And I think this is a mitzvah that needs to be reiterated over and over again. And we speak about Seva Bereshis and speaking about, you know, the Avos and the Imahos and learning from them. So the Torah went out of its way to say that Abraham had an emotional connection with his wife. And that Yitzchak had an emotional connection with his wife. The Torah does not say Abram got a check plus because he, you know, physically responded. You know, I can't even finish the sentence, right? It's not what the Torah says, right? And it doesn't mean on a grotesque level that Yitzchak took Rivka into his tent, you know, to do anything, you know, physical. It's not what the Torah says. The climax was the Ava. That was the climax. And it's important to not forget that reverse, that even though bringing her in the tent was mentioned, the climax is the Ava, right? First, you bring in the tent, and the Ava needs to get there. And life is so busy, so busy. And yeah.
This might be a weird question.
Yeah.
Is the mitzvah also equally applied to the woman to the
husband? Yeah, very good. So this is the reality. I'll tell you, it's a funny thing. I think the mitzvah, first, it's black on white in the Shulchan Aruch. Yeah. That the woman has obligations to the man. I'll read it inside, just because you asked, Robert. It's not a weird question at all. It's mamish part of the Armasaurus. It's not a weird question. Haisha, here we're in Simon Ayin Vav of the Shulchan Aruch and Ibn Ezer. And it's also in the Rambam, also mamish. But you know, bottom line is if a woman, there's a concept known in halacha as a moredes. A moredes is a woman who is not making herself available, quote unquote, for her husband. So if you look at the Rambam Sefer Ishus and the Shulchan Aruch, you'll find such a literature about a woman who's not properly, you know, making herself available. I could just pull it up over here in the Rambam Sefer Ishus, but I don't know. It's a little bit outdated, perhaps. I don't know if the emotional component is there. You know, I mean, you know what I'm saying? Meaning, there might be a little bit of a weight on the physical. Here, the idea here I am in Perek Tesvav of the Rambam. Yeah. Here. Here it is. I found it for you. I have a book. So there's certainly an obligation for the woman to what? To honor the husband. Right. And I wanted to, I didn't put it on the Makoros, but I saw the Makoros today. I want to find it for you, Rabbi, I really do. Because I literally looked at it today. So there's a kind of known as a moredes. A moredes is essentially a woman who doesn't make herself available physically for her husband. And I don't know, though. There's certainly no quote unquote chiyuv ona.
You didn't send out the photos.
Yeah. I got to send them out afterward. However, I remember when we were in Smicha, so again, on a psychological level, you know, psychologists have pointed out that men are more in need of emotional attention more than ever before, right?
Do you know the story of Rabbi Akiva Hager?
Yeah, after he lost his wife?
Yes, you know the famous story.
There's a letter that someone sent to Rabbi Akiva Hager wanting to set him up with another woman after he had lost his spouse.
And he did get married, but it was a time later.
Yeah. So someone wrote a letter trying to set Rabbi Akiva Hager up after he was, mourning his first wife. And Rabbi Akiva Hager, my Rabbi Murim Petorsky told me this, said back in the letter, I'm not emotionally ready to move on. I don't know if that's where you're going with this.
No, he said not only, but he's not ready, but there were many, many nights that
yes.
he spent just talking in Yanei Amunah with
right.
his wife.
Right.
That was a conversation.
Yeah, Rav Tversky spoke about this with us.
The small talk was talking about the philosophy of Amunah.
Yeah, I wanna get that line on Rabbi Gamliel. I'm so annoyed that I'm not. It's a different sugya, but it's right here in front of me somewhere. It's the sugya of a moredes. So it's let's just say it's on the books, Robert. No question about there. So annoyed of myself that I don't know exactly where it is, you know. But it's there. All right, what can you do? I can't find it, but yes, it's there. That being said, I don't know if a woman has to. And it's intuitive, but I have to learn more about it. That's my. It's on the books. It's called the Moredes. That's it. It's not a weird question at all. So again, I just wanted to point out that it's not just a good marriage schmooze. It's a halacha, and our job, really, any a woman, a man, any spouse, any loving spouse, is obligated by Torah law to make themselves emotionally available, not to be in a rush. And not to underestimate the value of that availability. You know, it's not a small deal. And if the Lubavitch Rebbe took the time every day to have tea, you know, everyone in their own world. And again, it's part of the Masorah. It's part of the Masorah. So we're not talking about anything that's particularly private, as much as everyone understands that being a good listener is an absolute required element of marriage, to be emotionally ready and available. And we should all be zocha to give our spouses that time and not overlook the value of giving that time. And yes, and in the merit of that, you know, obviously when we're in need of that as well, you know, it's a team effort. It's a team effort. I think the Torah doesn't need to tell women. I think the women know that part. You know, the women, they don't, you know, that's natural. All right, so we'll stop here. Thank you for listening.